अथाभिधेयाङ्गमनोनुकूलम् प्रभाषसे भागवता प्रधाना यदाह वया सखिरात्मविद्या विशारदो निरपितिं साधु पृष्ठा अथ साधु। O Suta Goswami, your words are pleasing to our minds. Please therefore explain this to us as it was spoken by the great devotee Shukadeva Goswami, who was very expert in transcendental knowledge and who spoke to Maharaj Parikshit upon being asked. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Knowledge explained by the previous acharyas like Shukadeva Goswami and followed by the next like Suta Goswami is always powerful transcendental knowledge and is therefore penetrating and useful to all submissive students. Masharam hridayam bathedam yad grihamanay harinam adyeyay na vritkriyet hat yata vikaro netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Certainly that heart is steel-framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and the hair stand on end. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. We should note with profit that in the first three chapters of the second canto, a gradual process of development of devotional service is being presented. In the first chapter, the first step in devotional service for God consciousness by the process of hearing and chanting has been stressed, and a gross conception of the personality of Godhead in His universal form for the beginners is recommended. By such a gross conception of God through the material manifestations of His energy, one is enabled to spiritualize the mind and the senses and gradually concentrate the mind upon Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, who is present as the Super Soul in every heart and everywhere, in every atom of the material universe. The system of Pancha Upasana, recommending five mental attitudes for the common man, is also enacted for this purpose, namely gradual development, worship of the superior that may be in the form of fire, electricity, the sun, the mass of living beings, Lord Shiva, and at last the impersonal super soul, the partial representation of Lord Vishnu. They are all nicely described in the second chapter. But in the third chapter, further development is prescribed after one has actually reached the stage of Vishnu worship, or pure devotional service. And the mature stage of Vishnu worship is suggested herein in relation to the change of heart. The whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living being in the matter of his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord as subordinate servant, which is his eternal constitutional position. So with the progress of devotional service, the reaction of change in the heart is exhibited by gradual detachment from the sense of material enjoyment and by a false sense of lording it over the world itself and an increase in the attitude of rendering loving service to the Lord. Vidhi bhakti, or regulated devotional service by the limbs of the body, namely the eyes, the ears, the nose, the hands, and the legs, are already explained herein before, is now stressed herein in relation to the mind, which is the impetus for all activities of the limbs of the body. It is expected by all means that by discharging regulated devotional service, one must manifest the change of heart. If there is no such change, the heart must be considered steel-framed, for it is not melted even when there is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. We must always remember that hearing and chanting are the basic principles for discharging devotional service, and if they are properly performed, there will follow the reactional ecstasy which signs of tears in the eyes of standing on of the hairs in the body. These are natural consequences and are the preliminary symptoms of the bhava stage, which occurs before one reaches the perfectional stage of prema, love of Godhead. If the reaction does not take place, even after continuous hearing and chanting of the holy name of the Lord, it may be considered to be due to offenses only. That is the opinion of the Sandarbha. In the beginning of chanting of the holy name of the Lord, if the devotee has not been very careful about evading the 10 kinds of offenses at the feet of the holy name, certainly the reaction of feeling separation will not be visible by tears in the eyes and standing of the hair on end. The bhava stage is manifested by 8 transcendental symptoms, namely inertness, perspiration, standing of hairs on end, failing in the voice, trembling, paleness of the body, tears in the eyes, and finally trance. The Nectar of Devotion, a summary study of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu, explains those symptoms and vividly describes other transcendental developments, both in steady and accelerating manifestations. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has very critically discussed all these bhava displays in connection with some unscrupulous neophytes imitating the above symptoms for cheap appreciation. Not only Vishwanath Chakravarti, but also Srila Rupa Goswami treated them very critically. Sometimes all the above 8 symptoms of ecstasy are imitated by the mundane devotees, Prakrita Sahajyas, but the pseudo-symptoms are at once detected when one sees the pseudo-devotee addicted to so many forbidden things. Even though decorated with the signs of a devotee, a person addicted to smoking, drinking, or illegitimate sex with women cannot have all the above-mentioned ecstatic symptoms. But it is seen that sometimes these symptoms are willfully imitated, and for this reason, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti accuses the imitators of being stone-hearted men. They are sometimes even affected by the reflection of such transcendental symptoms. Yet if they still do not give up the forbidden habits, then they are hopeless cases for transcendental realization. When Lord Chaitanya met Srila Ramananda Rai at Kavore on the bank of the Godavari, the Lord developed all these symptoms, but because of the presence of some non-devotee Brahmins who were attendants of the Rai, the Lord suppressed these symptoms. So sometimes they are not visible even in the body of a first-class devotee for certain circumstantial reasons. Therefore, real steady bhava is definitely displayed in the matter of cessation of material desires, kshanti, utilization of every moment in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, of yaratha kalatvam, eagerness for glorifying the Lord constantly, namagane sadaruchi, attraction for living in the land of the Lord, pritisthad vashati stale, complete detachment from material happiness, virakti, and pridelessness, manasunyata. One who has developed all these transcendental qualities is really possessed of the bhava stage, as distinguished from the stone-hearted imitator or mundane devotee. The whole process can be summarized as follows. The advanced devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord in a perfectly offenseless manner and is friendly to everyone can actually relish the transcendental taste of glorifying the Lord. And the result of such realization is reflected in the cessation of all material desires, etc., as mentioned above. The neophytes, due to their being in the lower stage of devotional service, are invariably envious, so much so that they invent their own ways and means of devotional regulations without following the acharyas. As such, even if they make a show of constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord, they cannot relish the transcendental taste of the holy name. Therefore, the show of tears in the eyes, trembling, perspiration, or unconsciousness, etc., is condemned. They can, however, get in touch with the pure devotee of the Lord and rectify their bad habits. Otherwise, they shall continue to be stone-hearted and unfit for any treatment. A complete progressive march on the return path back to Godhead will depend on the instructions of the revealed scriptures directed by a realized devotee. Heart is steel framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and the hair stand on end. As endowed within his holy name, all of his transcendental potencies. The potencies of the Lord are perfect and all attractive. When the soul comes in contact with the all-attractive qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the soul experiences inconceivable ecstasy of love, which cannot be contained by material means. We cannot understand what is ecstatic love with our intelligence, with our mind. We can only understand it in truth when, by the mercy of the pure devotees, we receive the grace of Krishna. So, if Krishna is non-different than his name, why is it that as we chant the holy name, we do not feel the ecstasy of love? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has prayed Namnam akari bahudani jasarva shaktis. Tatra pitani amitas maradena kala. Ethad rishi tapakripa bhagavan mamapi durdaivam idrishamihajani nanuraga. That your name is all attractive. You have many names, and you have endowed with all of your opulences. But Lord Chaitanya explains, I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction for your name. Although you are all attractive, I have no attraction to you. Just as a magnet naturally attracts the particle of metal or iron. But when that particle of iron is covered by dirt and other forms of unnatural contamination, then the attraction is not manifested. But when we clean that piece of iron and it comes to its natural state, it must be attracted to the magnet irresistibly. So the heart that is not attracted in ecstatic love to chanting Krishna's name must be covered by so many material contaminations, must be covered by offenses to the name of the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami has prayed in his pure state of prema that Krishna's name, we do not know how much attractive power it possesses. When we chant the name, our tongue becomes so unlimitedly blissful with the taste of the name that we desire many, many, many tongues. And when that sound vibration, which is sweeter than all sweet things, enters into our ears, we desire millions and billions and trillions of ears. We want to hear it more, more, more. And when that name enters into our heart, it conquers our mind. It captures our very life. This is what Rupa Goswami has experienced with one recitation of the two syllables, Krishna. What nectar it has produced. But in the neophyte condition of Krishna consciousness, we are saying the name of Krishna over and over and over again, and our mind is wandering to so many of the affairs of this material world. Our mind is actually considering it a great austerity to chant the holy name. When will my vow of chanting be complete for the day so that I can do something else? Something that gives more pleasure to my mind and senses. This is the condition? How is this possible? Why we are not expressing the same feelings as Srila Rupa Goswami in this regard? It is because we are chanting the holy name with offense. There are 10 offenses to the holy name, which we recite every morning before beginning our japa period. And it is very important to understand these 10 offenses and to very attentively and carefully guard them throughout the entire day. When we actually chant the holy name in a state of mind in which we are pleasing to Krishna, then Krishna manifests himself within his name. The holy name has its own independent free will because the holy name is Krishna himself and Srimati Radharani herself. And they appear according to the particular state of consciousness in which we approach them. Therefore, we cannot chant mechanically. It is not that if we just program our mind like a tape recorder in our mouth to just repeat the sound vibrations, that we will get the same result. No doubt, if we are doing it under the instruction of the spiritual master, even if it is in a very clumsy way, there will be benefit. There will be purification. But it is very gradual. We must come to the stage of sincerely aspiring to chant the holy name in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. It is explained by the reciter of Bhagavat in the previous verse that a person must receive the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotees on his head. Otherwise, such a person is compared to a dead body. If we want to serve the holy name, we must understand we cannot approach Krishna directly. This is a very important universal principle of true spirituality. We cannot approach Krishna directly. Krishna will not be pleased. We are so full of offenses. We are so full of contaminations. And Krishna is all pure. But we approach him through serving and pleasing his devotees. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati putopi. If one pleases Guru, then one pleases Krishna. If one does not please Guru, one can make all wonderful grand arrangements, but Krishna will never be pleased. And what pleases Guru is when we serve the Vaishnavas in a proper state of humility and devotion. To take the dust of the feet of the Vaishnavas on our head means simply to become the very, very sincere servant of such souls. So many egoistic people who are seeking the opportunity for some cheap spiritual benediction, they grab the feet of devotees, thinking that let me get the dust. But that is not what these scriptures talk about when they say we must take the dust of the feet of the great souls on our head. Generally, such grabbing displeases the great souls. What we mean is to put yourself, to situate yourself at the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. And that means to serve them. Actually, we can explain it in this way, that the dust of the feet of the devotees is in the form of the instructions that they give. And to take those instructions and put them on top of our head, which means to make them our life and soul and to follow them carefully, that is what is meant by putting the dust of the feet of the great souls on our head. Pariprasnena sevaya. To sit and hear attentively what they have to say. Those great souls who are accurately and humbly presenting the message of the parampara, we listen to them carefully, submissively, and then we follow what they say. We do what they say for their pleasure. This is the process of putting the dust of the feet of the Vaishnavas upon our head. And when we are willing to do this, Krishna is pleased with our efforts. And the first and most important instruction that the great souls give us is to hear the glories of the Lord and to very, very attentively chant his holy names. If we do not chant the holy names in a mood of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, if we do not hear the holy name from one who is actually a genuine Vaishnava, then our chanting of the holy name will simply be a sound without the potency. The example is given. that there are two types of bullets. One is a real bullet, and one is a blank bullet. Sometimes in the movie sets, or in the dramas, in order to have a very good effect, they have blank guns with blank bullets, and they are shooting each other. You see in the movies when they are shooting, they are using blank bullets. It sounds exactly identical as a real bullet. The only difference is nothing comes out. It's completely harmless. So if we are chanting the holy name in the wrong disposition of mind, or we are receiving instructions of how to chant the holy name from the wrong sources, it may sound exactly like the name of Krishna, but it will have no potency. Because Krishna will not be pleased to reveal himself to us through his name. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was laying right in front of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Gopinathacharya, who was the son of, the relative of Sarvabhauma, he was also present. And Sarvabhauma was saying about Lord Chaitanya that he has taken sannyas from Bharati Sampradaya. This is low class. I have the power and I have the authority to elevate him to the Saraswat class of sannyas. And besides that, he's very, very young. And such a young, beautiful person. How will he maintain his vow of celibacy as a sannyasi? So many young ladies will be attracted to him, undoubtedly. So I will teach him very scrutinizingly the Vedanta Sutra so that he can discriminate between Maya and truth, between Brahma and Mithya. And Gopinath Acharya said, "What nonsense you are speaking, Sarvabhauma. He is the Supreme Absolute Truth. He is Parabrahman. He is Bhagavan. He doesn't need your help to be elevated to a higher grade of sannyas. He doesn't need your teachings to free him from Maya. He is a controller of Maya." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said, "Do you know who you're talking to? You are talking to the greatest scholar of Vedanta in all the world. You don't think I can detect what is Bhagwan? Bhagwan does not appear in Kali Yuga. He is three Yuga. He appears in three Yugas. In Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, but not Kali. I am a man, you cannot just speak any nonsense to me." And Gopinathacharya said to him, "Unless you receive the mercy of the Lord, you'll never understand who he is. Even though he's living right in your house, even though you are touching him with your very hands, even though you are seeing him with your eyes, and you are speaking to him with your mouth and hearing his words through your ears, you cannot recognize who he is unless he is pleased to reveal himself to you. Unless he bestows his mercy upon you, there is no other way." So in the same way, Krishna's name, when we are chanting it in the morning, it is, Krishna is there, dancing on our tongue. Why we are not enraptured in ecstasy? Why tears are not coming from our eyes, our hairs are not standing on end, our limbs are not trembling, we are not perspiring, turning pale, falling unconscious, going into trance. Voice choked up. Nayanam galarashudaraya badanam gadgararudhaya gira pulakara nichitam vapultkada tavanama grahane babishyati. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is praying. When will that day be? When? I am longing for that day. When I recite your holy name, all of these ecstatic symptoms become visible in my body. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, once He jumped in the river Ganges. And he went under the water. And Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu, they jumped in because they saw that he was about to just go under to the bottom of the Ganges and disappear forever. And they somehow forcibly pulled him out of the water and put him on the bank of Ganga. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that he was laying on the bank, he said to them, "What have you done? Why have you done this? I have jumped in the Ganges to end my life." He said, "I have no love for Krishna, so what is the use of living without love for Krishna? What is the purpose of life if you don't have love for Krishna? What is the fulfillment of any of our activities without love for Krishna? If I had but one drop of love for Krishna in my heart, I could not possibly breathe. I could not possibly live for a moment in separation from Him. The reality is that I am breathing, I am living in separation from Krishna. That means I have no love for Him. So what is the purpose of my life? Why should I go on living?" This is the example of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How we should strive for, how we should long for, how we should aspire in every action of our existence for that love for Krishna, making it the only standard of success. The success of anything we do in our life is to the degree it helps to elevate us toward that state of loving Krishna. And any other success of this world that the people may adore is all useless. Shrameva hi kevalam. What is the use? It is all temporary. It will all be washed away by the innumerable waves of time and forgotten. We become successful in our life. We do something wonderful. Everyone praises us. But then the next day a different wave comes. And we do everything wrong, some mistake, and everyone condemns us. Srila Prabhupada used to use the example of President Nixon. He was such a powerful, great statesman that the whole country was adoring him, and he ran for the President of the United States, the most powerful material position on the planet Earth. And he won the elections, and he was sitting in his White House with his family, and anything he would speak was on nationwide TV, radio, magazines, every newspaper in the country, Associated Press all over the world. Anything he would speak, the whole world would hear. Anything he would decide became a law of the land. Such a powerful position. He was enjoying so nicely. And everyone in the country was offering their pranams to him in one way or another. The young people never liked him. The young people, they thought he was a rascal. But the older people liked him very much. So he was very famous, very powerful. And then somehow or other, he got implicated in some complication of doing something that wasn't correct, and it came out to the world, and he became the most villainous, unpopular scoundrel in the planet. Then there was nothing but all kinds of terrible, terrible articles about what a cheater and what a dishonest and dishonorable person he was. And ultimately, they forced him, "Get out of the White House. Get out of your presidency." They kicked him out. They kicked him out. He was trying to hold on, and he was lying. So many lies, so many dishonest things he was saying to protect himself. But ultimately, the facts are the facts. They had tape recordings of him. He's saying, "I never said this, I never did this." Then what are these tape recordings? This is your voice. They had professional analysis. And then they had his own most intimate ministers testifying that he told me to do this and he told me to do that. He was caught, as they say, red-handed. And then he was just miserable, weeping, crying, frustrations, practically was having ulcers and nervous breakdowns and heart attacks. He was such a miserable soul. And yet he was living in the White House. What is the use of such an existence? And finally, he saw the writing on the wall that he was about to be kicked out. So he came forward and said, "I resign." And everyone said, "Good. Out." So that is the waves of time. One day you're on top, one day you're in the bottom. And it is not simply on the basis of your free choice. It is simply a question of your karma, a question of providence, and a question of the ever transitional conditions of the three modes of material nature. So why should we think it is any great accomplishment to achieve anything in a world where everything's going to be taken away at any moment and anything can be reversed at any second? Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Dharma Svanushtata Pungshang Vishwakshinikatashya Notpadi Egyatiratim Shrama Evi Kevalam. That unless we are progressing on in the path of loving Krishna and developing a taste for hearing and chanting his glories, then we are wasting our time. A grihastha may have to perform so many duties and activities in this world, but he should orient all of that in such a way that he's making progress toward the goal of life, which is to love Krishna, prema pumartha mahan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us how to aspire for trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We must aspire to be humble like that of the straw in the street. The straw in the street, what is its significance? No one cares for it. People step on it, people spit on it, ultimately somebody comes and just sweeps it away. But the straw in the street remains very humble. Let it be. More tolerant than the tree, ready to offer all respect to others and to expect none in return. These are the qualities that attract Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sri Sanatana Goswami, it is humility alone that attracts Krishna, no other quality. Krishna doesn't care how much money you give him. Krishna doesn't care how many beautiful offerings you give him. Krishna doesn't care how artistic you may dress him. He doesn't care how profoundly you can speak his philosophy. He doesn't care how many delicious preparations you can make for him in your kitchen. He cares with the humility in which it is being offered. Because it is that humility that gives flavor and gives pleasure to the service that we are rendering. Of course, the nature of humility is we want to do the very ultimately best we possibly can according to our capacity for Krishna's service. If we're cooking, we must meticulously do it with such cleanliness, with such care, using the best, freshest possible ingredients, doing it in the most devotional way. That is humility. If we're speaking, we must try to very, very carefully learn the scriptures from the proper sources and present them as it is, with as much logic and philosophy and as much conviction as possible. Whatever we're doing, we must put our heart and soul to do it with our capacity, but we must do it in a mood of pleasing our guru, pleasing the Vaishnavas, and pleasing Krishna. understand that we are helpless to do anything with the mercy, without the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Mukam karoti vacha lam bhangum langayate girim yatripatam aham bande si gurum dinatharanam. A lame man can cross mountains, a blind man can see the stars, and the dumb man can speak eloquently if he has the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And if we can do any of these things, we should know that my position is not very strong. I'm depending on the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Without Guru and Krishna, even though I'm running over these mountain peaks, without that mercy, I fall flat on my face. I am speaking beautiful words of philosophy and poetry, but without the mercy of Guru and Krishna, I cannot think of a single thing to say. Keshav Kashmiri was the favorite devotee of Saraswati, the goddess of learning. And all knowledge, all poetry, all decorative embellishments on speech were constantly on the tip of his tongue. He was utterly undefeatable in debate. He traveled to every province of India, and every great scholar came before him and was pulverized by his learned capacity. He had Saraswati's blessing, and everyone knew this. He would chant his prayers and his mantras to Saraswati Devi, and she would just give him every kind of ornamented speech, answer to every question. He came before Nimai Pandit on the banks of Ganga in Shinavadweep. The scholars of Navadweep were very much afraid what to do. We are famous as being the most highest seat of learning in all of the world. One of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, I remember, he called in comparison, he said, Navadweep is that time what we would call the Oxford of India. Of course, Oxford is something different. But still, Navadweep was mostly filled with material education and the greatest scholars. And they were so worried. If Keshav Kashmiri defeats all of us, Navadweep will lose its whole reputation. What should we do? And none of us will dare to stand before him, because he has the power of Saraswati. So he became before Nimai. And Nimai offered him respects. Oh, you are such a great scholar. Can you recite a verse about River Ganga, the glories of Ganga Devi? And Keshav Kashmiri just instantly began to speak. He spoke 100 verses in glorification of Mother Ganga. And he spoke them in such beautiful, beautiful poetic language. All perfect rhyme and rhythm. All based on Shastra. And the young boys, Nimai Pandit was a grammar teacher with just little children learning from him. They were struck with wonder. They had never seen anyone who could recite such poetry like this spontaneously. And Nimai, he understood that what is the use of all this? If you're not pleasing Krishna, it's all useless. So out of his mercy, he said, please tell me what are the good points and what are the mistakes. And Keshav Kashmiri said, I have never spoken anything with mistake. And Nimai Pandit said, oh, well, what about... And then he began to point out the mistakes in his poetry. And for the first time in Keshav Kashmiri's whole life, his tongue did not move. He was Saraswati, move, move, move it, move it. But it didn't move. He couldn't say anything. He could not think of any. His mind became blank. He was incapacitated. He was like a dumb man. He just stood there. He was totally embarrassed and helpless. And all the children started laughing at him. But Lord Chaitanya wanted to destroy his pride without destroying his integrity. So he told the children, do not laugh. And he said, Panditji, today you are not able to answer my questions, but tomorrow we will meet again and you can give us some more poetries and you can think about how to answer my questions. And he went home, and that night he was just weeping and crying. He was devastated. And he was praying to his goddess Saraswati, why did you leave me? Why did you abandon me when I needed you the most? I couldn't think of anything. I couldn't speak anything. And I'm the greatest. And in utter frustration, he somehow fell asleep. And Saraswati appeared to him and told him that whatever powers I have, I am getting from Nimai Pandit, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. All your learned... My great mercy to you was I took away all your knowledge so you would humble yourself and surrender to him. That is the ultimate blessing that I can give you. Now you go and you surrender to him. That will be the perfection of your life. And Keshav Kashmiri went and he surrendered to Lord Chaitanya. The next morning he went to his house and he gave up all his elephants and all of his chariots and all of his thousands of followers and disciples. And he became a very humble, humble devotee. And then he was able to cherish the real gift of the chanting of the holy name. When he became humble, when he became a humble servant of the servant of the Lord, then whatever he did was most pleasing to the Supreme Lord. So we must prepare ourselves in such a way that our hearts become soft. It is described here that if the symptoms of transcendental ecstasy are not manifesting when we chant the holy name, it means our heart is steel framed. Krishna is pleased to sit in a heart that is melted by humility and devotion, that is so soft that it is softer than the softest. The hard heart is not a pleasing place for Krishna. What are the symptoms of a hard heart? Enviousness toward others, jealousy, thinking ill toward others, hoping the worst for others. These are symptoms of a hard heart. False pride, wanting to take credit for what we have done and loving to hear ourselves honored. This is the sign of hardness of heart. Material attachment, lust, kama, for the pleasure of the senses. Greed. Even though we have what we need, we want more and more and more and more with that insatiable thirst for material pleasure. Anger. Illusion. These are all symptoms of a steel-framed heart. And if we want to taste the nectar of the holy name, our heart must become very soft. And the process of Krishna consciousness is to melt the heart, to make the heart so soft that the natural qualities of the soul can manifest through our heart. And what are those qualities? To be the ever well-wisher and friend of all living beings. Not to want to exploit and to enjoy at the expense of others, but at the expense of ourselves, to give pleasure and enlightenment to others. Haridas Thakur, he chanted the holy name constantly. He manifested all the symptoms of ecstatic love. But what were his qualities? He was willing to be beaten through 22 marketplaces to the point of death. He didn't mind, but he wouldn't give up showing compassion and kindness to others by enlightening them in the process of Hari Kirtan. Even a woman who specifically came to disgrace him and ruin his image and ultimately cause him to be put in prison, she came for that most malicious and terrible purpose of destroying his reputation and destroying his life itself. And he knew she was coming for that. And he could have left, but he stayed on just to give her Krishna Prema. Such forgiveness, such tolerance, such love, such humility. When Haridas Thakur came to Jagannath Puri to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees came into the Gambira to meet him. And he was laying down the road away, laying in the dust of the road in prostrated obeisances. And while all the devotees were talking to the Lord and embracing the Lord was actually embracing them by force out of his affection. It was asked, where is Thakur Haridas? Oh, there he is, down the road, laying in the dust. He feels unqualified to even be in the association of your devotees. He feels unqualified to come close to you. He's so contaminated. This is his feeling. And yet he's Namacharya. Previous to this, not only did he convert this most wicked-minded prostitute into a Vaishnava, but Maya herself, the full manifestation of Krishna's external energy, Maya, appeared to him with all of her charms in the form of a woman. Now just think, a woman who's a little nice design in this world, sometimes our mind becomes, oh, very nice. Or a man who has some nice physical structure, a woman says, oh, very nice, very nice. People become intoxicated, completely infatuated in this realm of illusion. But what is the power of such beauty? It is just an infinitesimal, tiny little portion of the energy of Maya manifesting through someone to illusion you. The whole power of all Maya came in the form of a woman. Can you imagine what she appeared to be like? Don't imagine. With all forgiveness, I place my head at your feet and beg you to forget what I said. Don't imagine this. She came before Haridas, and with all of her prowess for three consecutive nights in a lonely place, in a place called Fulia. We are going to Fulia, hopefully, during our Mayapur Yatra. You should all come to the Mayapur Yatra, because when we go to Fulia, you can pray to Haridas Thakur to save you from Maya. This is the place that this Leela took place. She was, for three nights, they were all alone. It's not like he had god brothers and other, it's not that it was a brahmachari ashram where brahmacharis were saying, Prabhu, don't associate with this woman. Prabhu, you shouldn't talk to her without somebody there. It wasn't like that. They were all alone in the middle of a forest. And she was just, her amorous gestures and her sweet words, everything. She was doing everything within her power to melt his heart. But Haridas Thakur's heart was already melted. for Krishna, not for her. He was tasting the sweetness of Harinam, and he was just, for him, experiencing the ecstasy of chanting Krishna's name as such an infinite joy, that the pleasures of this world are useless waste of time. Jamunacharya prayed like this. Now that I am tasting the nectar of serving Krishna, even the pleasures of sex and the attractions of this world that are so much hypnotizing the mind of men, I spit at the thought of them. They have no pleasure. Param drisvani vartate. Experiencing a higher taste, you do not care for these mortal pleasures of the flesh when the eternal joy of the soul is present. So Haridas Thakur, he cared nothing for this prostitute's charms because he was tasting the charms of Krishna by chanting very loudly the Maha Mantra. Ultimately, Maya Devi was defeated by Haridas Thakur. After 3 consecutive nights of doing everything within her power, the name that he was chanting conquered her. The compassion and love in his heart made her submit to him. And she fell at his feet with tears in her eyes, and she begged Haridas Thakur to be her guru and give her initiation into the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This is the status of Haridas Thakur. Years later, he came to meet Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. If he was a different kind of person, he would be first in line to see Lord Chaitanya. He would say to the devotees, listen, I defeated Maya. I'm the guru of Maya, so I'm senior most above all of you, so I should go into the, you should let me first offer my obeisances. Huh? But yes, he defeated Maya. He made her his disciple. He was unconquerable in every situation. Advaitacharya gave me the first shraddha, not you. So I should be first to be embraced by Lord Chaitanya. No, although he had so successful a career as a Vaishnava, he did what nobody else had ever done. He was laying in the dust on the side of the road, feeling himself too fallen and too contaminated to come before the Lord. And he never, ever, ever wanted to even attempt to go into Jagannath's temple, because he considered himself so low that he wasn't qualified to go in to see Jagannath. But every day, Lord Jagannath himself, in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would come to the house of Haridas Thakur, Siddha Bakula, and personally, with his own hands, give him Mahaprasad, and personally reveal his supreme divine form before Haridas's eyes. It is these qualities of humility and devotion in the mood of the servant of the servant. When Haridas Thakur was offered any benediction in all of existence at the Mahaprakash Leela, what did he ask for? He was offered any benediction either in Goloka Vrindavan, Vaikuntha, Brahma Jyoti, the heavenly planets, anything in this earth. He could have asked for anything and received it immediately. At that time he revealed, what is the qualification of a person to chant the holy name properly? Why he is Namacharya? He asked for only one benediction. That let me, in every birth you decide me, in every birth you desire that I take, I come again into this world, grant me the blessing that I will always have the supreme fortune of receiving the remnants of food left behind by your devotees. The scraps of food your devotees spit out that is the treasure I long for, that I can always have the supreme fortune of tasting that food. What is the benediction I want? Let me take birth in the form of a dog in the house of your devotee, so that I can eat, I can, without difficulty, achieve the remnants of the food that they leave on their plates. And let me always be the servant of the servant in such humility, honor and respecting the Vaishnavas. It is because this was his aspiration that he could chant the holy name and Krishna could reveal such ecstasy in his heart. It was because of this humility and devotion that his heart was so soft, so melted in ecstatic love, that no temptation of material existence could possibly disturb his devotion. One time, a snake charmer, he was actually a special person, and he was chanting a particular prayer glorifying how Krishna danced on the heads of Kaliya, the great serpent. And as he was chanting this, so many people were gathered around to hear him. He was actually like a mystic snake healer. And when Haridas Thakur heard this pastime, he couldn't control his ecstatic symptoms. Tears started coming from his eyes, his limbs began to tremble, hair was standing on end, his body was changing colors, his voice was choked up, and he was dancing like a madman ecstatically, and then he fell to the ground in an apparently unconscious state of trance. And the snake man, he was so impressed by the devotion of Haridas, he started touching his feet and circumambulating him and worshipping him. And all the other people around started doing the same thing. So there was a Brahmin, very learned, scholarly Brahmin, who was thinking, just see all the fame and attention this person is getting. So he started imitating exactly Haridas Thakur. Tears started flowing from his eyes. His hair started coming on end. He started perspiring. His limbs, everything was trembling. He started dancing like a madman. Then he fell down in an ecstatic trance, apparently. And when he did that, the same snake man, he picked up a stick and began to beat him and beat him and beat him and beat him and beat him until every limb of his body was black and blue with wounds. And he just kept beating him, and the man just started screaming and started, "Save me, save me." And he just beat him and beat him until the person just ran away for his life. And then the people, they didn't understand what's happening. They said, when this Haridas did this, you were worshiping him and praising him? And this man did the exact same thing and you beat him and beat him? Why? Explain. This man is a learned Brahmin, and Haridas is an untouchable by caste. But Krishna doesn't care anything for one's caste. The fact is, Haridas, out of his softness of heart, was exhibiting his natural love for Krishna, which is worshipable by everyone. But this person, due to envy and pride, was thinking, why should this untouchable be getting all this good fame and reputation? I'm a Brahmin, I deserve it more. So he was artificially imitating for his own exploitative, envious, prideful reasons. And it is explained, that actually Ananta Shesha appeared within the body of this person to praise Haridas and to beat this imitator. And we are reading in today's purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, and all the acharyas, they warn us against imitating such symptoms. And India is full of such people. Because a movie actress can at any given time begin to cry, tears flowing from their eyes, because they train themselves. You can train yourself to do these things. There's actually training. If you just try hard enough to cry, then you can just, at any moment, you can just make tears start pour from your eyes. I've talked to people who can do these things. It's just a matter of practice. What to speak of sentimental ladies? Sometimes, you know, any given thing, they start weeping. It doesn't mean they're experiencing bhava. Usually it's because of some material anxiety that they do that. So you can actually imitate these things. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, if you get some material powers, you can actually make your hair stand on end. You can make your body change colors. All these symptoms of ecstasy can appear on a person if he's just practiced in the art of making his body do these things. But how do you know whether he's in ecstasy or not? You don't know. Therefore, it is explained here by the acharyas, you should know by the standard symptoms. Because most of the people who exhibit these ecstatic symptoms and are worshipped by so many thousands of people, as Bhagwan or as Mahaprabhu or as so many other great souls, they have illicit relationships. They are addicted to intoxications. Every one of them practically. Srila Prabhupada said it, even at the holiest of all holy places, Radha Kund, there are Babajis who exhibit all these ecstasies and they know the scriptures so well. But they can't live an hour without smoking a bidi. Or chewing tobaccos. They cannot have any peace of mind unless they know their gopis are waiting for them. In this way, what is the use? We can understand who is actually in this level of advanced Krishna consciousness, not by these symptoms, but by the symptoms of detachment from material activities, by someone who's always very humbly serving the previous acharyas, by someone who is always anxious to hear and glorify Krishna, by someone who doesn't waste a moment of their life in worldly affairs. These are things that you can see, concrete, and understand. We are not impressed by what could be imitation. In fact, it is explained here that great souls, they generally restrain from showing any symptoms of ecstasy in front of general people. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was the Mahabhava avatar. He was full with the highest ecstasies of Srimati Radharani's love. And when he met Ramananda Rai, who was Vishakha Devi, his ecstasies were so much. This took place on the banks of River Godavari in Kavur. Someday we should take a yatra there. It's a very wonderful place. Govinda Prabhu and Mahabhuti Prabhu and myself, we visited that place in March of this year. We spent many hours at Kavur, the exact place that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his bath in the river Godavari, and the very place he sat for many, many days discussing topics with Sri Ramananda Rai. And ultimately he revealed his form of Radha and Krishna to Ramananda Rai at that place. And by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we sat there and we prayed and we had kirtan and we read all the wonderful chapters of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita describing the meeting and the conversation of love between Sri Ramananda Rai and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when they first met, they were both in such ecstasy. But these Brahmins, they were not so advanced. So somehow or other, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai both contained all of their symptoms and appeared normal to them, because they know you cannot show such things to common people. Because people will take it cheaply, and unscrupulous people will imitate. But we should know that the perfection of our heart's desires and the very perfection of our human life is that our heart internally melts in such transcendental ecstasy upon chanting the names of Krishna. And the fact that we are not immersed in such ecstatic love every time we chant the holy name should be the proof, the irrevocable evidence, that I'm not really a very advanced devotee. So I should just, whatever other good qualities I have such a long way to go. So let me just humble myself before the Vaishnavas. Let me be the humble servant of the Lord's devotees. Let me scrutinizingly be careful to follow the instructions of my spiritual master. And let me do my sadhana with such sincerity that Krishna will someday take notice. However long it takes, it's worth it. It is the ultimate perfection of all of our desires. So let us follow in the footsteps of the great souls with humility and devotion, and thus melt the steel-framed hearts that are giving us so much trouble and problems in this world. It is through chanting the holy names in an offenseless way and living our life in such a way that we come to that stage that we can experience the nectar of Krishna consciousness. Kirtaniya Sadahari. Mahaprabhu had two most confidential associates in Jagannath Puri: Ramananda Rai, who was Vishakha Devi, and Sri Swarup Damodar Goswami, who was none other than Lalita Sakhi. Today is the appearance day of Lalita Sakhi. And the topics of such transcendental love affairs of Radha and Krishna are the ultimate perfection of the pure heart to remember in that state of ecstatic love. Lalita Sakhi is the leader of all of the Sakis, Manjaris, and Gopis of Vrindavan. She is the most confidential associate of Srimati Radharani. She is actually the very expansion of Srimati Radharani herself. And she is Srimati Radharani and all of the Gopis' Shiksha Guru. She actually gives instruction of how she's always making arrangements and giving words of love to Srimati Radharani on how she can best enjoy wonderful, wonderful pastimes with Lord Krishna. Never does she think for a moment, for all of eternity, of her own pleasures or of her own existence. her eternal transcendental function is simply to give her life, her body, mind, words, and life in such a way to serve Radha and Krishna, to assist them so that they can enjoy together to their full satisfaction. Lalita Sakhi is the very embodiment of complete, selfless, unalloyed love. Her every consideration is simply what will give more pleasure for Radha and Krishna to enjoy together. And when Srimati Radharani was in separation from Krishna, Lalita Sakhi, who was none different than Srimati Radharani's own heart, would recite particular songs and verses that would directly and accurately correspond to Srimati Radharani's feelings. When she was anticipating meeting Krishna in her heart, Lalita Sakhi would chant those slokas corresponding to the meeting of Krishna and describe beautiful pastimes of Krishna that would awake, that would further enhance Srimati Radharani's feelings of love. And when she was in deep, deep separation, Lalita Sakhi, knowing exactly what was the state of her heart, would chant beautiful bhajans and songs to pacify her in her separation and to increase the ecstasies of her love. And therefore, all of the Manjaris and all of the other Sakhis, knowing that she was non-different from her heart and Radharani's heart were non-different, they all accepted guidance and direction from Lalita Sakhi. In this way, everyone in Brajbhumi is the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Radha and Krishna are the supreme enjoyers, and everyone's existence in Vrindavan is simply to be the assistant of the assistant, the servant of the servant, to help bring upon more pleasure between Radha and Krishna in their pastimes. And this same Lalita Sakhi appeared in Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu's Leela as Sri Swarup Damodar Goswami. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in his Gambhira, in the ecstasy of love, Swarup Damodar would exactly know Lord Chaitanya's heart, because Lord Chaitanya's heart was the heart of Sri Radharani, immersed in feelings of sambhog and vipralamba, of meeting and separation from Krishna. And whatever Lord Chaitanya's heart was feeling, Swarup Damodar would know exactly the song to sing to enhance and embellish that ecstasy. His eternal role of Lalita Sakhi was manifested in the most wonderful way on this earth, in this form of Sri Swarup Damodar Goswami. When Lord Chaitanya was living in Navadvip, Swarup Damodar Goswami was then known as Purushottam Acharya, and he was the constant loving associate of Lord Chaitanya. When Lord Chaitanya left Navadvip to go to Katwa to take the sannyas vows in the presence of Sri Keshav Bharati Maharaj, Purushottam Acharya could not, he became like a madman. That Gauranga has taken sannyas, he's left his wife, he's left his mother, he's left all of us. He's a mendicant, roaming. He became so mad in ecstasy of separation from Lord Chaitanya that he himself went to Varanasi and took sannyas from a sannyasi of the name Chaitanyananda. And he accepted the spirit of sannyas and the vow of sannyas, but he avoided all the formalities of a sannyasi. He took sannyas for only one purpose, so that he could exclusively dedicate his body, mind, words, and life to the service and the remembrance of Krishna. He didn't want any other of the other benefits or formalities of sannyas. He just wanted that total surrender to giving all of his time and existence to remembering Krishna. And his Guru Maharaj, Chaitanya Ananda, explained to him, Chaitanya, that you should study Vedanta Sutra and you should teach it to others. And with his Guru's permission, when he found out Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had returned from his 2-year tour of South India and was in Jagannath Puri, he came. His Guru Maharaj, when he took sannyas, gave him the name Swarup, because the title of a brahmachari serving a sannyasi of that particular order is naturally given the name Swarup. He did not accept a sannyas name. He kept his brahmachari name, as did Lord Chaitanya. And when he came to Nilachala, Jagannath Puri, he offered his prostrated obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw him, he was so happy. He said, "I had a dream last night that you were coming to see me again. I have been longing for your association." He said, "My eyes have been blind due to not seeing your beautiful form." He said, "But now that you are standing before me, now I have been given vision and sight again." And Swarup Damodar Goswami replied, "My Lord, I am the most fallen. I am the most worthless. I am the most contaminated soul. How is it that I gave up your association? How is it that I left you? It is only by your infinite causeless mercy that you have dragged me back into your company again. I surrender to you." He was so humble. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him and praised him with words of such affection, because he sang more beautiful than a Gandharva. Lord Chaitanya gave him the name Damodar. And thus, the name his sannyas guru gave him, Swarup, and the name Lord Chaitanya gave him, Damodar, he became known as Swarup Damodar Goswami. And he was such a devotee that when he would sing in kirtans, it would just put Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in transcendental ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya would just forget everything except the beautiful, beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna when Swarup Damodar would sing his beautiful songs in kirtan. He was always one of the leaders of the kirtans in Ratha Yatra. And it is explained by Vrindavan Das Thakur that when Lord Chaitanya was living in Puri, Swarup Damodar was practically 24 hours a day constantly with the Lord singing kirtan, directly corresponding to the Lord's mood of devotion. They were inseparable. Their hearts were one. And not only did he sing more beautiful than a Gandharva, but he was more learned than Brihaspati. He had complete mastery of all the scriptures. And he had full, deepest realizations of the essence and the conclusions of the scriptures. And therefore, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would not read a book, he would not hear a person speak, he would not hear a song or a bhajan, unless it was first heard by Swarup Damodar Goswami and approved by him. Because if somehow or other these various compositions did not truly capture the Siddhanta, the conclusion of all knowledge of pure unalloyed devotion, Lord Chaitanya could not tolerate hearing it. And even those beautiful compositions which were discussing only pure unalloyed devotion, if they had any rasa bhas or any unauthorized mixtures of mellows, Lord Chaitanya could not tolerate hearing. It had to be perfect parampara. And Swarup Damodar was the authority. So he was the screening agent who would always be making sure that whatever came to Lord Chaitanya's ears or to his eyes was perfectly pleasing to his heart. And because he knew his heart, he was not different than his heart, there was no one else who could perform this service. Sri Swarup Damodar Goswami was the attendant of Lord Chaitanya as his personal secretary and the Prayojana Guru of our Sampradaya. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami was personally put under the care of Swarup Damodar Goswami. It was Swarup Damodar Goswami that personally trained Raghunath Das Goswami in his mellows of ecstatic love for Krishna and for Mahaprabhu. And we, on this most auspicious day of the appearance of Lalita Sakhi, we honor this supreme, most intimate expansion of Srimati Radharani, especially in her form of Swarup Damodar Goswami, because in this form of Swarup Damodar Goswami, she distributed Krishna Prema throughout the world. And how? It was Lalita Sakhi as Swarup Damodar Goswami that gave all the secrets to Raghunath Das Goswami. It was he that gave all his secrets to Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, and it was he that revealed all those secrets to the whole world in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So on this day, let us pray for the mercy of Lalita Sakhi. Srila Rupa Goswami has written a beautiful, beautiful prayer called Lalitastakam in praise of Lalita Sakhi, in which he prays that unless one becomes the servant of the servant of this most illustrious form of unalloyed devotion, one cannot approach the loving service of Radha and Krishna. Thank you very much. And tomorrow is Radhastami, so we will have a wonderful festival for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. It will begin at Mangal Arati, and it will go on, and the major part of the festival will begin at 6:30 in the evening. It will be Abhishek for Sri Sri Radharani and Sri Gopinath ji, and His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj is also very anxious to be at our humble temple on this auspicious celebration. So there will be many wonderful ways we can offer our lives for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and their devotees. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki. Shri Radha Gopinath ji ki. Nithai Gopimanandi.